The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Good morning, Reading. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to my show, Positively Healthy. We're on KCNR 1460, if you're just waking up on a Saturday morning. It's kind of dark out there. Gosh, do we have a great show for you today. We're going to talk a little bit about Reading's history and what it was like for our upcoming guest and after World War II, and we're going to reach back in time a little bit and talk to Susan Chase, who is a licensed counselor and art therapist. Before we do that, we've promised you a regular segment of we're going to have, little short, maybe 10-minute segments here where we're going to teach you something. And so the philosophy of this show is that, health is one of those funny things. If you make a lot of little changes, the kind of changes that are just easy to make, where you're not really trying and you just made a little shift, well, before you know it, you're healthy. And so what we hope for you in life is that you have the energy you deserve every day to get out there and do whatever you think is important for you. And so part of a healthy lifestyle is eating real food without a whole bunch of chemicals, all sorts of, if you can eat food where you can pronounce the ingredients, they're things you've heard of, well, hey, you're going to do pretty well. And so I want to introduce to you a regular monthly segment. We have Rocky and Tiff Carbajal. Welcome, chefs.
Hi.
Good morning. So they are trained chefs, and they have Sweetie's Barbecue and Catering here in Reading. And they were on about a month ago, maybe a little more, and we talked about stir-fry. We're talking about different things people can make to get healthy. And today, we're going to talk about salad dressing. And so we're just going to have we're trying to make things easier and easier for people to mix 3, 4, 5 ingredients, and then they've got something that can be life-changing. We know salad dressing, it's expensive for one, and then when you read the ingredients on the label, you see, there are like 40 things in there, that, and most of them are chemicals, and so you end up with this interesting little liquidy, syrupy stuff called salad dressing that is just a health risk. And so, it doesn't matter how great your vegetables are, but once you pour that stuff on, we've just taken a big giant step backwards. And so let's talk about what are you teaching us today?
Well, we got a simple salad dressing, kind of a base that we use into other dressings. Mm-hmm. This is kind of a Italian style. Red wine oil-based dressing. Pretty simple. And then you can use this, and you can substitute the oils, you can substitute the vinegars in it, and also the herbs, and you can make whatever you want out of it. Really simple.
What do you mean, whatever you want?
You can make different kinds of different styles of salad dressing out of this one basic recipe.
Oh, okay.
By substituting different vinegars.
Okay.
It can change it up dramatically.
Okay. Well, so let's go through this.
All right. This makes 1 cup of dressing. Your basic vinaigrettes are 3-to-1 ratio, 3 parts vinegar and 1 part oil. So we're starting with 2/3 of a cup of red wine vinegar and 2 cloves of garlic, fresh and minced. 2 teaspoons of chopped basil, oregano, and thyme, and this is a total amount of those. Or if you don't have that and you want to use dried, only 1 teaspoon of that, and you have to let it sit for at least 24 hours to let it to rehydrate and for the ingredients to come out. About 1/8 of a teaspoon of salt and pepper. It's 2 tastes. That's pretty optional. And 1/3 cup of olive oil. And the whole thing is put together and emulsified by 1 teaspoon of Dijon mustard or whole grain mustard. So you start off with your mustard, your garlic, your...
Okay, what do I do with that garlic now? You said do what to
it? You want to mince it up really fine.
What does that mean?
That's you get it and you can smash it with your knife, and then chop it up really, really fine.
Okay, so you buy the garlic that's in the produce department.
Right.
You take one of those little
cloves.
Cloves. Okay.
Pop it out of the skin, and we like to just make it easy. Just smash it with the back of the knife, the broad side of the knife, and it smashes it, and the skins come off pretty simple, pretty easily. They just pop right off, and then mince it up, just kind of cut it really small.
Chop until it's just kind of mushy, kind of?
Yeah, just like really, really tiny, tiny pieces.
Not mushy, just tiny pieces.
It helps, yeah.
This sounds unbelievable. Okay, let's go through this again. So, like 2/3 of a cup of red wine vinegar. Now, that is just at the store, like red wine vinegar. It's in the vinegar section.
Right.
Okay. Definitely. So that's inexpensive.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. When you say chopped basil, oregano, and thyme in total of 2 teaspoons, now these are fresh. These are dried. We have them in our cupboard.
These ones are the fresh ones.
Fresh. Okay.
They tend to release their flavor a lot easier than dried. Dried, of course, is going to be more concentrated, so you only use a half that amount of that. It's an Italian seasoning blend, basically.
Okay, so if you don't have fresh, and you open your cupboard and you see that you do have oregano or thyme or basil, like even if you just put one in, you'd be okay,
yes,
you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, so just like get some kind of little
something else in
herb
there.
Thing going on in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, or you don't have to put it in at all. This is just one of our...
I know, no. I'm just trying to see, you know, like how we can make this work for everybody who is standing in their kitchen right now
so
thinking
about
that.
So put everything in a bowl.
Yeah.
Just put your red wine vinegar, garlic, and herbs in the bowl.
Mm-hmm.
You can put your salt and pepper in there, too.
Okay.
And then you're going to drizzle the olive oil in slowly.
Oh, there's
and
the
then,
technique.
And whisk
you forgot
as
the,
you...
forgot the Dijon mustard in there.
And you put the Dijon mustard in the bowl, too.
Otherwise
with the red wine
it's not
vinegar.
Work.
Okay, so the Dijon, so everything's in but the olive oil, you're saying?
Exactly.
Okay, now I've whisked it all up.
Whisk it, yeah, mix it all together.
Okay.
And as you're doing that, slowly pour the olive oil in as you're whisking.
Okay.
And then
what does that do?
It makes it emulsify, so it traps the oil into the molecules of the vinegar.
So does that mean it's not going to separate?
Exactly.
Now,
I've
been to people's houses where they're homemade... vinaigrettes didn't separate. That's what they knew how to do that.
And if it keeps on separating, add more mustard.
Oh,
the secret
is
the mustard. The more, and it won't really overpower the dressing because mustard with the vinegar, it won't overpower it.
Okay.
So you won't really taste the mustard all that much. It'll mostly just be just a delicious garlic and vinegary flavor.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So Rocky and Tiff, I think we've got this. And any listeners who are confused, email us, and I'm trying this tonight.
And
so,
then one good way of changing up the whole recipe is instead of red wine vinegar, put in apple cider vinegar.
Ooh.
And it makes it a little more fruity, a little more sweet.
Yeah. Okay.
Or other vinegars. You can put also balsamic vinegar in there. Same recipe, but balsamic vinegar. And that'll change it dramatically, too.
Okay. And so now, give folks your email address and website. If they are having a little trouble, they can email you and get a little help. How do they find you guys?
It's Sweeties, SWEETIES, catering at sbcglobal.net.
Excellent. Hey, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Boy, I love this. Okay, thanks. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt. We'll be right back.
My name is Barbara Harrison. I've worked with Francie Sullivan on boards and numerous community service projects. Francie has the best interest of Reading's future in mind. She is a people person who truly cares about people. Francie has her eyes on the details of everything she sets out to do. Accountability and efficiency are her hallmarks. She definitely cares about Reading's future, or she wouldn't be in this race. I know that before she entered this race, she thought long and hard, and now knows that she has made the very right decision. The City Council is the watchdog of the taxpayers' money. She will be a good watchdog. She's the best candidate. Again, my name is Barbara Harrison. Vote for my friend Francie Sullivan for Reading City Council.
I'm Francie Sullivan, and I'm asking for your vote for Reading City Council. Citizen safety should not be jeopardized with 2-man fire trucks and an understaffed police department. Wages and benefits should be negotiated with respect and appreciation for all concerned, paid for by the committee to elect Sullivan for City Council 2010.
You can save your business money by paying less for postage. I'm Jennifer Haynes, Marketing Director with NorCal Presort, your business mailroom. Outsource your mailings to the experts at NorCal Presort to save time and save money. Think about it. Is that postage equipment sitting in your office making you money? The answer is no. Realistically, you pay a lease, you pay maintenance and ink, you pay labor, you pay full price for the postage, all in advance. How is that saving you money? Get rid of the postage machines and bring your mail to NorCal Presort. NorCal Presort takes the frustration and hassle out of your business mailings. Mailing costs are an increasing monthly expense, but we know how to save you time and money in first class and with your direct mail. Come and see us at 835 Industrial Street, just off Hilltop, or call 221-6895. Save time and money today at NorCal Presort, your business mailroom. Call us, 221-6895. This is Robbie Cleary of Reading Tents and Events. Listen to Bridal Talk every Sunday from 12 to 1 on KCNR 1460 and visit us at 1270 Market Street in downtown Reading.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun. And
welcome back. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to my show, Positively Healthy. And in the studio, we have Susan Chase, who is in from Lincoln, California today. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you very much. It's a joy to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. And, you know, you are an art therapist and a licensed counselor.
Yes.
And you have been for many, many, many years.
Yes.
Now. How many years, about?
Since the early 70s.
Since the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you're from Reading,
yes,
in the event that you got here when you were two.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And I want to go ahead and introduce, you know, we're just going to triple team Susan today. There's just so much to ask her. She remembers so much about Reading during the Depression, World War II, the needs of women and men, families, during a big chunk of our history. And then it inspired her to be a counselor. She saw a pretty dramatic need. And We're going to ask her questions here and listen to a lot of her wisdom. And in the studio, we have Mark Beecham, and we have her daughter, Judy McGuire, and I want to welcome both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so, Susan, you,
yes,
got here when you were two, and you were raised here, and you were raised on South Street mostly, or where?
Later in life, I moved to South Street. But in the beginning, it was a depression time, and many people will remember that. And people lived along the river, and they had tents. Some had tents. Some just made a fire and lived there. And they worked around this area. There was enough produce so that they could stay. And as soon as that was over, they moved on. So nobody stayed very long. But we did. We got a trailer and moved into a small trailer, and it was right next to the water, the lake,
Sacramento River, right?
Yeah,
there?
The river. We,
okay,
were right on the river next to the park. I could walk under the bridge and go right to the swimming pool where Mrs. Dimmick, who I had as a teacher many years later, her son was quite basketball hero.
He was?
Yeah, he was tall and good in sports.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mrs. Dimmick was the lifeguard, and I played in that water and really learned to swim right there where it was the park, and there were concrete steps. I don't know what it looks like now. But also they had gymnastics later in the day. A married couple came and taught some gymnastics.
So people were living along the river, but it was also a form of entertainment. I mean, that's where,
yes,
you learned how to swim.
Yes.
There were things for kids to do.
Lots to do. And they had a rowboat that belonged to everybody. And anytime we wanted to go across the Sacramento River, my dad would load us all in the rowboat, and across we'd go to our best friends, Jack and Dode.
Wow.
I don't know what ever happened to,
yeah,
them, but I remember them clearly.
Oh.
Clearly.
Of course, this was before the dam was constructed. Your,
yes,
your dad worked on the,
yes,
dam.
Yes,
and
did.
The river was much,
yes,
not
lower,
as swift and not
warm,
as cold. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very warm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we see those old pictures where people look like they're relaxing in the water.
Yes, they were. And on the weekends, it was very exciting to hear the boats, the speed boats. They had races.
Wow.
And they would get out there and then race the boats. They would smell horrible. You could smell that awful, you know, engine. I guess it was gas.
Yeah, the exhaust.
You know, the exhaust,
yeah.
And, but everybody was thrilled with that race.
So at this point, then, we are in the Depression, and mm-hmm. then the war breaks out.
Yes. Then the war breaks out, and right away, my father was a steam fitter, and he loaded us into the car, and the way we went to Los Angeles, and we lived along the beach. Every year we moved, there was a shortage of apartments and houses and places to live, and I think that everybody moved in 1 year, and so I went to 4 different schools there.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and that was a little traumatic, but it was okay. It was fun to be near the water. Johnny, forgot his name, Weiss Miller, lived behind us, and he had he was Tarzan then. And we went to the matinee. We walked to the matinee, my brother and I. Every Saturday it cost 10 cents to get in, and you were there. And once in a while they had a talent show. And I thought, well, why not get in the talent show? I know how to sing, but I didn't. But I got up there with my girlfriend, and we sang, and somebody played the piano. I don't know. I was just fearless.
Now, when did you move back to Reading?
We moved back right away after the war, and we lived on South Street, South and Market.
Oh, okay.
And across the street was a church, a Methodist church, and that's where I went to the youth group and sang in the choir, and we went on field trips to see things like into the snow, and one day I played ping pong. We were really good at ping pong because we could do that anytime we wanted. But anyway, I looked up and Galen was in my class, and he was the son of the preacher, and there was a stranger with him, and I said, "Who is that guy?" And he said, "That's my brother, or just my brother. He's home from Japan." And so, but I didn't pay any attention to him. He went on to college. He had already been in college, and he had to get back. So from there on, he just happened to be around driving the kids to the snow. We went to the snow. And coming back, he didn't say a word to me, not a word, and I didn't to him. But coming back, I was pushed into his Studebaker and into the middle of the seat. There were no press-down seats in those days that I remember. And at any rate, and he grabbed my hand and held my hand, and I said, "What is going on here? I don't know him." And I usually was very, very scared to hold about strangers. My mother beat that into my brain. I never used it here. But anyway, he did ask me to go to a play at the high school.
And do we know the rest of the story?
Yes.
How many years have you been married to this guy?
I've been married to him for 61 years.
Congratulations.
And we got married in 1948.
Oh, my. I'm going to take a quick radio break here. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt. We'll be right back.
Today, most beef and poultry products come from factory farms, from animals raised in confinement, fed antibiotics, and genetically modified organisms. Fortunately, there's a local source of humanely raised grass-fed beef, organic chickens, and pastured free-range eggs. The Martin family at the Lazy 69 Ranch near Round Mountain wants you to get back in touch with your food and your farmer. Look for Lazy 69 products at Orchard Nutrition, Holiday Market, Sunset Market, or online at lazy69ranch.com.
Your symptoms are by now familiar. Your heart increases its pace. Your palms become sweaty. Your eyes dart back and forth, seeking escape into another dimension. And you begin to make flimsy excuses.
I got to give the cat a bath.
The rock garden needs watering.
I can't. It's Tuesday.
Yes, you are suffering again from dentist dread. But now there's a cure for this debilitating condition. Available now online at palosidrodentistry.com or by calling 547-5757. One appointment at Dr. William Farrell's Palosidro Dentistry has been shown to effectively diminish or eliminate entirely the symptoms of dentist dread. Dr. Farrell and his able staff employ techniques gained over 30 years of military and private private practice, cutting-edge technology, sedation dentistry, and evening or Saturday appointments if Tuesday really is a problem. A lovely, healthy smile and the end of dentist dread is a phone call away. 547-5757. Palos Hedro Dentistry. Special consideration for veterans. Financing available OAC.
Hi, this is Donnie Greenberg, publisher and editor of anewscafe.com, the North State's favorite online news magazine. If you've ever read my columns, you know I like to speak my mind. And now I'm inviting you to tell me what's on your mind. Join me every Sunday from 11 a.m. until noon, right here on Radio KCNR AM, 1460 on your radio dial. Do radios even have dials anymore? Tell me what you think about everything, right here every Sunday from 11 a.m. until noon on KCNR.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just
welcome back. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. You're listening to Positively Healthy here on KCNR 1460. And we're talking to Susan Chase, licensed counselor and art therapist. And we're getting her history a little bit. You know, we've learned that she grew up in Reading. We've learned a little bit about the Depression, what that was like. And we also learned that there was the preacher's son that was pretty cute, and now she's been married to him for over 60 years. And so what was that like then? Part of why we have you on here today is I was taken by a story you were telling me. I met you in May at right. Shasta High's all-year reunion,
yeah.
And you really kind of... There just seems to be a chunk of time missing in the history of Americans where we have, you know, people coming back from the war in World War II. We have, you know, during the war, women filled in and they did, you know, they just hopped into these jobs. You were saying they weren't really well trained. They didn't have a whole lot of skills. They, you know, and so we have this chunk of time that we just have a little bit of I didn't know much about it, and I was so taken by what you were sharing with me that I wanted to have you on to talk about it more. And so tell me what that was like. You know, the men were going off to war. The women were jumping into these jobs.
It was a very difficult time for women then because some had family, and the family could fill in. But everybody didn't have family. My grandmother lived here, and Mark's grandmother lived here, so we had some family here to, and coming back from the war was a totally different. I had been in the city, Los Angeles City, for 4 years, so I wasn't the same person, wasn't naive and you know, threatened by anything, because I'd been everywhere, it seemed. And down there, they had soldiers along the ocean at every corner, and we lived on a corner next to the water. They would drop off from an army vehicle, privates probably, PFCs, and they had to stand there, and they were supposed to watch the ocean because they were afraid that the Japanese would invade there,
mm-hmm.
or anywhere along the ocean. That went on up farther as well. And we were, I don't think we were much of a target because there were no ships being built here and no... military facilities that I know of. But we did have a National Guard, I'm sure. Everybody had that. We had a watch. We had a warden. There was always a warden out at night. Sometimes he would come to the door. Sometimes we never knew. But it was to keep everybody's lights off and windows shut. And
were we doing that up here, too?
Yes, okay. We did that here, too.
And what was our group, our spotting group, who would look for planes?
I can't remember the name of it, but you remember.
It was called the Filter Center. And
yes.
People would, there were outposts around, and people would call in if they saw an aircraft. And these aircrafts would be, I guess, charted along a map of the North State. And so... it was a way to keep track of aircraft, and if there were aircraft that were unidentified, then I guess the word went out that there might be, you know, an attack or an invasion. That never happened, though.
I'm interested in what Mark said because my mother-in-law belonged to that, and she spent hours and hours inside. I don't know whether she was mapping or what, but anyway, they did send over an airplane that came from Japan just to test and make sure that people were doing their job. and not knitting or crocheting or whatever they did over there. But anyway, they were very seriously elderly ladies doing that. Jean's mother was one of those. And they sent this Zero over. That's what they call the Japanese fighter planes. And one lady found it. She saw it in the air. And she was an outdoor one person. And she reported it immediately. And then later they told them, you were right. I think we were the only ones that saw the Zero. And they ran it over all these little towns.
Wow, impressive. Hey,
yeah, it was very
impressive.
The system
worked. I like that.
And I want to talk about the wives that whose husband had gone. That meant that they had to go to work somehow. And they seemed to do well working. Some didn't. Some stayed home. And they had very little money. The soldiers didn't make much. And they sent their chicks home automatically so their family could eat. And they had also times, I remember standing in line to get food. Maybe Mark remembers that. I think we got blocks of cheddar cheese. I remember some potatoes once. There was farmers stayed home. They didn't go to the war. And they got more gas. We didn't get enough gas to go anyplace. We had a 5 on our windows in the car. And but farmers were... They had to go to turn out the crop to keep us all alive and the soldiers. So they had a 7. They had more gas. They could run their equipment. And some of the women did go work in the fields.
This is Dr. Trudy Pratt. We're going to take a quick radio break, and we'll be right back.
Citizens of Reading, the recent compensation survey commissioned by the Reading Chamber of Commerce and Builders Exchange proves that many of our Reading employees already received next to, if not the absolute lowest in overall benefits and wages. Measures A and B are simply a smokescreen for the special interest projects of Mayor Jones, Councilpersons Bozzetti and MacArthur. Behind the scenes, federal stimulus dollars have been spent on paving the road to Coach Rick Bozzetti's ballpark. Without council approval, Patrick Jones seeks federal dollars for his Oasis Road project. Why weren't their pet projects put on ballot measures? Mayor Jones and Councilman Bozzetti say they want the input of Reading citizens. However, at the June 15th council meeting, Bozzetti made it clear that his mind was made up regardless of how the citizens vote on measures A and B. These council members are behaving like dictators. We deserve council persons who do the job they were elected to do. Vote no on measures A and B and elect council persons who will do their job. Paid for by IBEW Local 1245.
Here we go.
Linda Bott. Hi, Linda Bott here. Join me on Thursdays at 6 p.m. for my show, On the Spot with Linda Bott, right here on KCNR 1460. We'll talk food, fashion, theater, what's hot and what's not. I'll be doing in-depth interviews with musicians. Tune in, and you can win special gift certificates from your favorite restaurants, boutiques, and the Mount Shasta Mall. That's On the Spot with Linda Bott, Thursdays at 6 p.m., brought to you by Elegant Soul Boutique on Placer in California, Shasta Regional Medical Center, the Mount Shasta Mall, Dandelion Boutique, home of your Brighton dealer, and Market Street Wines, next to the Cascade Theater. Great chocolate, cheese, and wines. See you then.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last.
Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. You're listening to my show, Positively Healthy, here on KCNR 1460. We have Susan Chase, licensed counselor and art therapist, with us today. She's in from Lincoln, California, and she's from here. And so she was raised here, went to Shasta High. You know, we're in the middle of this fascinating story. And part of coming back from this break, let's go into what it was like for men coming back from World War II.
I think... many of them got married before they left. I don't, in case they didn't come back or whatever. And so, but most of the women did have children already or pregnant when the husband left. But the thing is, they did not bond with the men that came back. They were strangers. They'd been gone years. And they came back. They didn't know the kids. They didn't know how to father the kids or how to, they couldn't talk about their experiences. It was just absolutely too painful. And they had PTSD.
Post-traumatic, yeah, stress syndrome.
Yes, but we didn't know. We didn't know until this war. And we've gone on through many wars now since. In fact, it's been one right after the other. But just feeding the family was a hard thing for everybody to do. We had to depend on these farmers that were growing crops down around Woodland. Jean's grandfather grew crops down there, and they would bring them up, and you'd go and stand in line and get potatoes. I remember potatoes because they had giant bugs in them that were scary, but otherwise it wasn't. But the poor soldiers, they couldn't go back to their jobs. They had to go to school was one option. My husband worked at the plywood mill, which had just opened, and made a fortune in 1 or 2 years. And before he went back to college in Stockton at UOP. And then we loaded up and went back to rent a small apartment in what used to be Army barracks. And we lived there and brought our daughter with us, Judy McGuire. And we were still in the mode of not having very much to eat. We ate a lot of Spam. Do you remember that? And
absolutely.
and we ate lots of eggs. They were seemed to be plentiful, and potatoes. But there was no butter in those days, and I don't remember us ever having dessert. There may have been some fruit summer, but we didn't. I don't remember eating it. And so nobody gained weight that I know of during the war. And we had to take the butter that came in a package. It wasn't real butter. I don't know whether it was lard or what. And the inside was a little like a pill that was red, and we cut that out. And the kid's job was to press that and press that and press that till it looked kind of like butter, yellow.
The margarine, huh? Go ahead,
yeah,
Mark.
The margarine.
Now, these soldiers came home, and mm-hmm. they had many of them had experienced horrific, horrific things yeah. during the war. And I'm sure that many suffered from what we now call post-traumatic stress syndrome, but they didn't really understand it in those days, and these people had no place to talk about it, right?
True.
I know from my dad's experience, he didn't have to, he wasn't on the front line during the war, but he flew a lot into the Pacific Theater and into the European Theater transporting things, but he didn't really talk about his wartime experience. So how did these folks cope with the awful memories that they had?
Well, let me tell you about my aunt. Her youngest son, they lived in Denver, Colorado. Well, Boulder, Colorado, sorry. And he was going to be a pastor himself, but he had to join the war because everybody did it. Everybody went to overseas if they could, if they were, and he went to Iwo Jima, and he was killed by the Japanese right away. And she was devastated, and there was no way she could know. They tried to return to where he was killed, and I don't think they even found his name. They buried the soldiers right there on the beach. But they searched and finally moved on. But my aunt was still worried about him. She was still worried, about not being able to say goodbye and to die under such horrendous conditions. And then they moved to other islands, and the ships were off the islands, and the ships, they had to send boats in, small boats. The Japanese had already conquered those islands, and they sent boats in with the soldiers on them, and not very much sea rations. That's what they ate, and not much water. They had run out of water, and malaria was rampant there. They were sick, and they had to shoot the Japanese. They could not take prisoners. There was no place to put the prisoners. They couldn't stay on that island. Everybody was abandoned as soon as everybody was dead. And those Japanese people were able to take their families, their babies, with them. But that's just the way it was. I don't know if anybody survived there. As far as I know, they didn't.
So these men came home from the war with
yes.
these kind of experiences.
Yes.
And
is there a lot of alcohol abuse? Or
they went right back to work, or they tried to get back to work.
They tried.
And they tried to, you know, reintegrate mm-hmm. with the families that they had started before the war. It must mm-hmm. have been a difficult thing.
It was difficult for everyone. They had the GI Bill, and they could go to school, but that meant there were no colleges here. I was through, you know, right away and gone in 2 years with my baby. They called them baby boomers. And they went wherever we went. And we came back and forth because we had our house here. And so every vacation we could come up here, even though we rented the house, we rented to teachers. So we could come and claim our house when we needed to come back to Reading. But the poor soldiers, they're down there going to school. They're having to live in Quonset huts, which the Army had just moved out of at UOP, and I think this went on at most colleges. And they had to adapt to that surrounding and being again away from family. And the wives had all the responsibilities, and it was difficult.
Okay, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. We're talking to Susan Chase, licensed counselor and art therapist. We'll be right back.
If you're looking for natural remedies for your health problems, look no further. East Earth Tradewinds, Reading's most complete herb store, has hundreds of Chinese herbs, books, essential oils, and more. You can also make appointments for acupuncture treatment or oriental therapeutic massage. We're open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Visit us at 144 Hartnell Avenue in the south end of the Raley's Cobblestone Shopping Center. That's East Earth Tradewinds, 144 Hartnell Avenue in Reading.
My name is Barbara Harrison. I've worked with Francie Sullivan on boards and numerous community service projects. Francie has the best interest of Reading's future in mind. She is a people person who truly cares about people. Francie has her eyes on the details of everything she sets out to do. Accountability and efficiency are her hallmarks. She definitely cares about Reading's future, or she wouldn't be in this race. I know that before she entered this race, she thought long and hard, and now knows that she has made the very right decision. The City Council is the watchdog of the taxpayers' money. She will be a good watchdog. She's the best candidate. Again, my name is Barbara Harrison. Vote for my friend Francie Sullivan for Reading City Council.
I'm Francie Sullivan, and I'm asking for your vote for Reading City Council. Citizen safety should not be jeopardized with two-man fire trucks and an understaffed police department. Wages and benefits should be negotiated with respect and appreciation for all concerned. Paid for by the committee to elect Sullivan for City Council 2010.
Hi, this is Elizabeth and Aaron from the Reading Tea Party. Join us on Sunday mornings on KCNR 1460 from 8 to 9 a.m. for We the People, a talk show dedicated to the voice of the formerly silent majority in the areas of limited government, fiscal responsibility, and adherence to the Constitution.
And we want to hear from you, so email your topic and speaker suggestions to 1460 at readingteaparty.com and be silent no more.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the moment last. Just kicking down the cobblestones.
Welcome back. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to our show today, Positively Healthy, here on KCNR 1460. We have Susan Chase, licensed counselor and art therapist, here with us today. She's up from Folsom, California. She's from here. We're talking about kind of the tough time people went through at the end of the Depression, into World War II, what it was like for women, what it was like for men. Men came home from the war. Women kind of moved into jobs that they needed to take. Some of them loved it. It was hard for others. The war ended, and then this country was really in a jumble. You know, if you're from my generation, there's sort of this perfect 50s picture that got painted for you. And what I liked about when I met Susan back in May is that you learned that there was just people were having a lot harder time than maybe I realized. And so
you know, we have the suburbs, they happen. There's this thing where you got your own little house, you got, you know, it's sort of, we've made it win, and so you've got your family, they're out in the house, and it wasn't really all that perfect for people. We have post-traumatic stress for the husbands who went to war and came back. We have mom and the kids at home. Maybe they had a sense of community when they were, you know, they had neighbors next door. They maybe had extended family living with them. And part of an American dream is, you know, this idea of getting out into the suburbs and having your own place, your wall-to-wall carpeting. And so, you know, people went a little bit nuts. Would you say something like that?
Yes, I would say that hits the picture very well. The soldiers, then, if they moved and they were in the suburbs, remember, everybody was from someplace else. And you met your neighbors, your immediate neighbors, when they were watering the grass or whatever, or babysitting. And you got to know them so that you could exchange children. You know, their kids could come to my house and my kids could go to their house. And sometimes it worked that they worked nights and somebody would watch the kids during the day so they could sleep. The husbands were also working as they went to school, and they had they struggled because they didn't have the education that we had. In Reading, we got a marvelous education. It put me right into college at Humboldt State College with no problem whatsoever. I passed every test they gave me. I was shocked because I had moved so much and met so many people and had so many teachers. I didn't know whether I was where I was on the education scale, but I was shocked when our friend was the dean there, and he was from Reading also, and that was Gene's first teaching job, high school English teacher. And I lost a baby shortly after that, and so I went to Humboldt State and said, I got to get in this semester now or fall apart, because there was no place to go. There was no counseling, even at Humboldt. There wasn't a counselor you could go to. And I said, I need a job, too. Give me a job. And they did. They put me in the office teaching, typing. And so, and Gene got a job. He was working for the post office every time. When the earthquake came, maybe you don't remember the earthquake, but we had an earthquake. Well, we lived there in Arcata for 5 years. And it was quite a bad one because all the mail, it was Christmas, just before Christmas. My baby died before Christmas, this horrible earthquake. She remembers it. She was old enough to remember that earthquake. I couldn't hold on, and I couldn't get to my baby.
Wow.
The other one. I couldn't reach her. So we just had to rock it out. And they had, and the, across the street, you know, the bricks were falling out of the houses and the chimneys and so on. Anyway, it wasn't all fun and games. We went to a city, and I lived in L.A., but you didn't meet anybody in L.A. You just did what you had to do there, and you always took the bus. We didn't have a second car. Nobody had a second car then. And you would get a ride, though, if you had a job. My brother always got a ride with somebody else to get him to Santa Monica. We were quite a ways from Santa Monica, and that's where the jobs were. And so somebody pick him up. Or he could take, if he left early enough, you could take a bus. But buses, we would go to the city just for an outing because there was no place else to go except the ocean, which we went there every day. But when we went to the city, lots of people were working at this giant market there. And we'd go to that giant market, and there were many people, that mostly men, working there. And coming back to our house, the bus ran off the road. The driver missed the curve, and we went straight into the sand. And there weren't extra roads. There was no place. There were very few sidewalks to walk. I had to walk about probably a mile to get to the streetcar to go to my to Universal Studio. That was near. All Hollywood was right there. Some of the people in my class were in high school there, and elementary school and junior high. And so I, you know, and they were just another person.
Now, when you're, okay, we're going to take a quick radio break here, and we'll come back with more questions for Susan Chase, licensed counselor and art therapist, after this.
What do you look for in a building contractor? Experience and quality, and someone who's reliable? Dennis Janeway hits the mark. Dennis has got more than 30 years' experience doing all types of construction. So whether the job is big or small, new home construction or a kitchen or bathroom remodel, call Dennis Janeway today at 604-6702. For experience, quality, and reliability, call Dennis Janeway Construction, 604-6702.
Citizens of Reading, vote no on ballot measures A and B. These ballot measures are a waste of our tax dollars. Slick Sacramento politicians govern with ballot measures. We don't need this nonsense in Reading. The Reading Chamber of Commerce and the Builders Exchange commissioned a study which proves that many City of Reading employees make next to, if not the absolute lowest, in overall wages and benefits. City of Reading employees are responsible for providing highly skilled services, such as the delivery of safe drinking water and electricity to our homes and businesses. City of Reading employees provide these services at some of the lowest rates in Northern California. For example, Reading electric rates are the second lowest in the entire state. We need to retain the highly skilled City of Reading employees that provide us with exemplary services at low rates, but we cannot do this with an adversarial city council. Protect our low rates and great services, vote no on measures A and B, and elect new city council persons who will truly care about the citizens. Paid for by IBEW Local 1245, the skilled professionals with decades of proven dedication to Reading citizens and businesses.
Hi, this is Don from Bridal Talk. Every Sunday from 12 to 1, we'll be talking about your wedding, how to make it a special day, how to keep in budget, how to handle the unique problems and have a stress-free wedding. We'll be having the guests you want to hear on how to pick the right photographer, the right music, and the things that are important to make your wedding one of the most successful events of your life. Talk to you on Sunday, right here on KCNR 1460.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the moment last. Just kicking.
Welcome back. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and we're closing up our show here in the next 8 or so minutes. We're talking to Susan Chase, licensed counselor and art therapist. And Susan, welcome back. We just love having you here today.
Thank you for having
me. So nice.
Gosh. I love being here.
Oh, good. You know, we're talking about just how hard it was after World War II. And I want us to shift a little bit because, you know, that motivated you. You could see people were in pain. There was no place to go for men and women. They were having a heck of a hard time. And it got you into counseling.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so how did that impact your career?
Well, I saw the need everywhere. And I even felt the need myself. And especially losing a child, it was terribly traumatic. And I had, on our insurance, we get 3 visits, as Judy knows. The teachers did. And so I thought, oh, boy, I'll get all this. I can talk fast. And then I'll get help. And, you know, there was no help. I got in there, and I got a man in a suit who reeked of cigarette smoke. He was an addict. And he sat and listened. And then he did no help at all. And so I thought, well, the heck with this, I'll go pay rather than this. I'm not going back to that guy. And so everybody was seeking. Everybody was going in the bookstores. The women were reading self-help books, and we were discussing that. Go ahead,
Mark. But there weren't very many self-help books in those days.
No.
Today it's a big part of the bookstore, but in those days it was like, you know, Dr. Spock or Ladies' Home Journal, right?
Yes.
That was about it.
That's true. And we now know that Dr. Spock is off the wall and we won't touch him. And now we do it new ways in our ways. And we're going backwards, in fact, to our grandmothers because they knew how to raise a child and cuddle it and hold it and rock it.
So at that time, you were telling us yesterday that, boy, you know, even child rearing was like, have a kid, sit him in the corner, let him cry. I mean,
yes.
You know, I would have to think that we wouldn't have made it this far if that was how we parented kids. You know, I mean,
yes.
I think it's a human instinct to haul your kid around on your hip. And so we were kind of being a little polluted there with some odd thought.
Right. What happened often, and I never dreamed it would happen, but the women who were taking care, babysitting, they were doing it for the living, you know, for the money, really, not to make the children happier or quieter or whatever. And so what happened is they got abusive. They just had no tranquilizers that they'd give out in those days and no help of going to counseling. They just had to stick through it. And they would injure, damage, and kill a child accidentally.
Yeah.
And they did get off many times because there were no cases. Nobody won if you went to court. And lawyers were the same mess that everybody else was. They just graduated from law school. Doctors were the same way. And I had a girlfriend in Arcata, and she had two little boys. And we were close, and she went to a doctor to get help. She was in bad need, and I was not couldn't counsel then. And anyway, he raped her. Doctors were doing that. That was common, but they wouldn't. You'd take you a while, but they'd come out. If I brought the subject up in groups, somebody would talk about some offense that went on.
Where did you go from there as far as your training you did in the Sacramento area?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you for asking. I'm jumping ahead. Anyway, I went to a junior college first because it was cheaper. And it was fun, and I met a lot of nice people. And then I had to go on. They made you go on to senior to Sac State, they called it. That was, now it's CSUS, it's a university. But it was a wonderful class, and the more art classes I took, the better I got. I liked art, and I could draw, and I was born with that ability, and nobody really taught me. But in that class, we were a unit, and we could talk about what was happening at home. And there were, by then, the drugs had hit, and the homosexuals were teaching. Yes, my teacher showed pornography on movies in my psych class, and that shocked me to pieces. But there it was, and it was, they let him do it. They didn't stop him. So you couldn't go to the office and complain. All you could do is walk out and get a D, if you got a D.
So they were trying to open your mind to kind of the problems of people or the situations that people are going through?
Yes, and that was new to me.
Yeah.
I was totally new. But the things, and drugs were new. I did not know anything about drugs, but they were there all over the campus.
So people, and your training as a healthcare professional then, we went from a time where people weren't really talking into a time where people started, you know, like through your training, you got your clients to really talk to you.
Yes.
And, you know, people started talking more. You, in fact, you were even saying you thought that Oprah had a lot to do with that.
Yes, she did.
It becoming a normal thing for people to talk about their problems. So is that something you would?
Yes, that happened. But I wanted to say before that happened, they put me in charge of a class at night. They gave me a job. The colleges do that.
They gave you a job doing what?
Yes. The teacher in a class. And in that class, I questioned each student, and they answered honestly to me because they trusted me. And that's where I started to see that there was a great need in everybody. Then they gave me, they started asking me to speak other places. And so they sent me to high school classes. And I would go and find out that they were even in worse shape, the kids.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we're at a place now where we're oversharing? Like there's just so much talking going on here in our last minute. You know, what do you think about that?
I mean, that's true. It's time for Oprah to move on because... as much
there's
as
the line of the show.
Yeah, as much as I love her, and she's made a tremendous difference, and now we have Ellen DeGeneres out there and other people not leading talk shows, and so we're moving on. We're changing for the better.
For the better. Well, hey, I hope you've enjoyed today's show. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and we've had a lot of fun today with Susan Chase in the studio. It's fun to look back, you know? We're all different because of our history and our current culture. So we hope to see you next week or have you listen to us next week here on KCNR 1460. Have a good Saturday.
Thank you for listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media. This is KCNR Shasta Redding.
Fox News Radio, I'm Karen Riegel. Fox News confirming, in Yemen, officials say a woman's been arrested in connection with those explosive packages that were supposed to be sent to the United States and were instead intercepted in Dubai and Britain. The White House, meantime, has told Yemen the country stands ready to help in Yemen's fight against terrorism. Meantime, now is not a good time to post anything from Yemen.
The offices of UPS and Federal Express, the two shippers of the two individuals' packages, have been shut down. I was told 30 soldiers marched into the FedEx office and literally closed the place down. Everybody involved in the shipping operations there, not just with those individual companies, but also at the airport, the cargo handlers, were questioned.
That's Fox's Greg Palcott reporting for us from London. British officials say the bomb found on that cargo plane outside of London certainly could have exploded, and if it did, it likely would have brought down the plane. President Obama